to the UK Gamers Podcast. Well, there's lots been going on because it was Essen recently. Lots of really, really cool stuff going on. Now, I've had quite a good time. I've recently picked up the One Ring RPG from Cubicle 7. Looks really nice, some interesting ideas, and look forward to trying to bust that out at some stage. I've also managed to pick myself up a copy of Soro, which is a very interesting kind of winding path game where you basically try to get one over your opponent without either colliding with them or seeing yourself zoom off the edge of the table. I've also managed to pick up De Profundis, the expansion for Claustrophobia, so very pleased about that. I also became aware, due to Essen, of this thing called Gamecrafter, and I've been enjoying trying that out and doing some bits, but more of that later. Now, with Essen coming up, there was a bit of an issue because a big German company went bust quite a while ago. I believe it's called Shear, and it caused all sorts of kerfuffle. It meant a lot of manufacturers were going to struggle to get their games to the Essen show. I think most of them did get them there by Friday or Saturday, but it did cause a little bit of confusion. And there's lots of really cool stuff that I was researching on the run-up to Essen, and also got me excited during the coverage of Essen by Board Game Geek on their live video chat feed. The Road to Canterbury, an interesting looking game, where basically you're like a pardoner, and it's all about the seven deadly sins and all that. Got some beautiful historical artwork. Definitely one to have a look at and see if you like the look of that. And of course, anything based a bit on the Canterbury Tales has got to be worth a laugh. Eclipse, really nice looking sci-fi game, one of these kind of 4X games. Really like the look of that. In fact, I've pre-ordered that. Definitely one worth looking into. Earth Reborn's been around for quite a while. I like the look of that. That's going on my radar. It is still available direct from the manufacturer. You get lots of stuff, and it looks quite interesting, and it's got some nice basing for kind of your Arc of Fire and lots of widdly little cards and stuff. Definitely looks good. There's been quite a few Dragon games I've noticed, which caught my eye. I wonder what that's all about. This. I wonder if The Hobbit coming out soon has got anything to do with that. Risk Legacy was another game that looked quite interesting, kind of updating Risk. There's not too much information about it, but the box art looks good. I was a big fan of Risk in my youth. I've actually got a copy of Risk, and I'm trying to look which version it is. I can't remember exactly, but it's a fairly recent version. Not so keen on the pieces it comes with. I think they could have written the rule book a bit better. Plays slightly differently to how I remember it, but it's basically still Risk, which is good or bad. There's some bits of it obviously haven't survived the years quite so well. Kingdom Builder. Now that was another interesting looking game. On my radar again, not 100% convinced, but definitely one to have a look at. Sparta, that was yet another game that looked very interesting, designed by a young fella, and looks vaguely interesting, a fairly simple little kind of chess-like war game thing, checkers maybe. Still quite interesting. If the price is right, it might be worth picking up. Obviously, with The Hobbit coming out, The Hobbit game, be interesting to see what that's all about. And another really cool-looking game was the Manhattan Project. That looked really, really nice, I have to say. Lovely artwork, and it's basically the race to build the bomb. Looks good, I have to say. Definitely one to check out. Ladybirds and Other Insects, which I will not even attempt to say in German, looked really good. It was basically a game of Snap with a little bit of tweaks. Nice and cheap. If I'd been at Essen, I probably would have picked that up just so I had a nice simple game to play with my niece. She'd quite enjoy it, I think, and be a good way of, you know, trying to identify insects as well. So slightly education element there. Space Maze, again, another interesting looking game, another one that I'm going to have to look into. And Martin Wallace had some really cool bits as well. He had Discworld, which is Ankh-Morpork, and that looks quite interesting, particularly his couple of deluxe editions where you get a special dice which has the number between 7 and 9 changed, because of course we all know that's not a good number. And then the super deluxe edition which had the resin pieces. Definitely looks quite nice. More interesting to me was a mention of a charity game, and I finally found out what that was all about, and it's basically Old Men of the Forest, and it's a game where most of the proceeds are going to go to the Orangutan Fund. The game's a bit random, a bit of light-hearted, fluffy nonsense in some ways. But, you know, it's definitely worth supporting just purely from the fact it's going to send most of its money to the way of a good cause. So definitely interested in grabbing hold of those two at some stage. Speedway Champion was a new game that was demonstrated at Essen. Don't know too much about it. Looks quite interesting. Definitely one to keep an eye on. Had some really nice pieces and an interesting idea of power sliding around the track. Unfortunately, that's about all I can say about it, I'm afraid. Some other really cool looking games was Strike of Eagle, which is an old game that's been kind of rebranded and repackaged by Uwe of Academy Games. Looks really good. Quite a good element of bluffing where you put down orders on various units without revealing what those orders are. People, you know, then are going to react to your orders, and then you reveal your orders and actually do your actions. And it's basically a block war game. Definitely looks nice, and I know Academy Games stuff always is very nice looking and has a great quality feel. Uwe had all sorts of fun kind of flirting and larking around and generally misbehaving on his presentation, and at the same time he explained the game very well and quite quickly. So I don't think the rules are desperately complex to pick up and learn, but it looks like a game that might be quite complex to actually play well. That quite a good win for me. I think that looks another interesting game. And then, of course, from the Power Grid stable, there's Power Grid First Spark and the solo card game Friday. Both of these look great. Freedom Fries, with his green hair, was very good at demonstrating those two. He seemed to be very excited about Friday. Some nice little ideas, I have to say. And again, definitely going on my watch list. So that was all the stuff that I sort of was aware of leading up to Essen and also saw on the feed at Essen. But in addition, there were some other new bits which I hadn't really seen. There was lots of really cool-looking French, Russian, and even Italian games. And the artwork on the French, and in particular the Russian stuff, was just mind-blowingly good. And unfortunately, I haven't really been able to get too much up to speed on what's going on there. But, definitely people to keep an eye on, the French, Russians and the Italians right now. They've got some really cool games coming out, or cool-looking games anyway. So definitely cast your eye in that direction. Starfleet Captains by WizKid, that actually got demonstrated at Essen, and I've seen good and bad reviews about it. Mostly good if you've bought it, bad if you've seen it, I think. One of the problems is, due to the packaging and the amount of stuff you get, I think the cards can bust loose and potentially damage ships, which isn't a good start. And also people are worried about the thickness of the tiles and the cards and everything, and also how fragile the ships are. Overall, yes, they are concerns, but I think the game's really good. It's going on my Christmas list, and it looks like a really good, fun game. There is a little bit of concern over, you know, how fragile it is. And the only reason that's a concern is because the game isn't cheap. I think it's about £74 plus delivery here in the UK. And at that price, you expect it to be pretty good, I have to say, in quality terms. And the game, I think, looks good, plays great, but there is that little nagging doubt in the back of your mind about how good the quality is. Now, I haven't actually physically held it or seen it, so I'm just reporting other people's comments here, which really annoys fans of the games, because they say, yeah, people keep ragging on that, but you know, I've bought it and I'm loving it and I'm having great fun and it's not that bad. And some people have even done things like laminate the tiles and all sorts of stuff. So be interesting to see whether a deluxe edition is in the works, because they have also announced at WizKids a new Starfleet game where you get pre-painted ships which look pretty similar to the ones that you get in Fleet Captain. However, there is rumours that that's from a different factory and all this stuff. So be very interesting to see how that develops. Definitely one for me to pick up, and hopefully a deluxe version with slightly better components, although I hate to think how much that would cost. Right, now the other bit of news from Essen were two weird bits. The The first was the announcement that Merchant of Venus was coming out from Stronghold Games. And this was very exciting. And it actually sort of got leaked a bit by Tom Vassell, by the sounds of it. And it was all very exciting, quite a bit of buzz. However, a little spanner was put in the works when, I think the very next day, there was an announcement from Fantasy Flight Games that they also had exclusive rights to The Merchant of Venus. So, cue lots of fan ranting backwards and forwards and all stuff. It's still up in the air, and it's all looking a bit messy and murky. Now, I believe the story is that Stronghold Games approached the original designer to the game, and he was aware that he had exclusive rights to the game because Avalon Hill had gone and the rights had reverted to him and all this business. So he sold the rights to Stronghold. However, in the meantime, and unknown to everyone else, Fantasy Flight Games had approached Hasbro, who owns pretty much all the game catalogue from Avalon Hill, who believed they had exclusive rights for Merchant of Venus, so they sold the rights to Fantasy Flight Games. So, cue the lawyers, I think. Both sides have made the odd comment that seems maybe a little bit underhand, and the odd comment that looks very upfront. I think at the moment it's fairly civil. However, in the back room dealings, I'm sure lots of stuff's going on. Be very interesting to see what happens. The Fantasy Flight game looks like it's a slight Fantasy Flight style tweak into the original game, whereas the Stronghold game pretty much is the original game, but, you know, with maybe a little bit of errata and up-to-date graphics. Going to be interesting to watch. Not going to be necessarily pleasant, but it's definitely going to be interesting. The other thing that came out of Essen was they had this video feed and a load of chat on there. And that's inspired me to be quite creative recently. And one random comment on the chat, or the Zoom guild, as it is now on Board Game Geek, inspired me to start designing a crazy game based a bit on the experience of being on the Essen chat. And it all came about due to a random comment by Melissa, who was kind of the host of the chat feed, where she was having problems with a broadband due to her cat trying to eat moths. So this has inspired a crazy party game that I've currently got in fairly late testing now, called Moth Eating Cats Destroyed My Broadband. So that's something I'm going to be bringing out. I've actually decided to get it listed on Board Game Geek because it's getting pretty far along, and I've actually ordered some kind of beta test components to actually get a look and a feel for how everything works out. And basically it's going to be a little fun party game that's very chaotic and random, and it's got quite a bit of, you know, take that attitude. But hopefully, despite all that light, fluffy, fun stuff on the surface, underneath there will be the odd little difficult tactical choice and everything. So that's hopefully this weekend going to actually get some play testing by more than just me. I've been doing a lot of four-player solo testing. It's looking good. I'm really impressed by the quality of the production. The cards and everything look really good. Be interesting to see how that pans out. I think basically at this stage it's a question of tweaking the rule book to make the game really work. The cards are fairly locked in. There could be a late redesign, but I'm hoping not to have to do that. But that led me on to create another game called Zombies Ate My Brains. And that's very, very far down the beta test. And it's actually a solo game with the possibility of a two-player option. And I've basically played that now over 200 times. And I have to say, I've tweaked it about 6 or 7 times, and version 6 of the rules basically pretty much reverted to version 1 of the rules, but used the rule book from like version 5 and stuff. So basically, I'm pretty impressed that the first version of the rules I came up with were pretty much there, and it's just been a question of trying to balance it to make sure that one side doesn't always win, but the other side doesn't always get absolutely cremated. Basically, in this game, you are a freshly created zombie, part of the zombie apocalypse. In fact, you're one of the more powerful zombies in the zombie universe, and you're trying to take down humanity before they manage to kill you all off. And basically, you win if you, as the zombie player, are still left alive and got at least one piece of your body left anyway, when the humans basically run out of resources. And you've got to cope with all sorts of nasty little surprises. And it helps if you play carefully but aggressively. And I've noticed if I play a certain way, I lose every time. If I play another way, well, I do sometimes lose, but that's the way I nearly always win. And it also helps if you go through your deck very quickly. So I will end my little commercial for my two little games that are currently in deep beta. They are on the GameCrafter website. They're not actually available for purchase yet. But the reason I went off to the GameCrafter website was because of all the chat at Essen, and also the mention of Jumpgate, which finally got a full-on release at Essen as well. And I actually bought the GameCrafter version of Jumpgate at the same time as my beta copy of the Cats game. And I've got to say, I am pretty impressed. Yes, you know, there is a slight amateurness about some of the bits and pieces, but, you know, for a reasonable price, it's pretty impressive, I have to say. So that's what I've been spending the last few days and weeks, possibly even, doing. It's also got me to dig out some old game designs I've had kicking around, where it's maybe just, you know, a couple of lines of this is the game name provisionally, this is sort of what the game's about, and this is the sort of mechanisms I want to put in it. So I'm at the moment on a creating games like crazy drive, possibly because I'm actually having trouble with my gaming group at the moment. Work and everything has meant that my normal gaming night I can't go to anymore, because I'm currently working till, you know, gone 9 o'clock at night. But there you go. Good position, I suppose. Gives me a little bit more money in my pocket to buy games with. In other news, lots of cool stuff. Pelgrane Press got lots of great stuff. Trail of Cthulhu, Fear Itself, some really cool stuff for that. But what caught my eye was Lorefinder. Now, this is something new to me. I think it's been around a little bit recently, but I haven't been to Pelgrane's website for a few months. But Lorefinder seems to be Gumshoe meets Pathfinder. Could be interesting, a fantasy gumshoe. Definitely one to keep one of your eyes on. I think I'm going to need about 50 eyes at this rate. So that's looking pretty cool. Now, the other news that was very interesting is Beast of War. I mentioned we're doing some TV stuff. I've actually managed to see some of the shows. It's basically on the table. Looks pretty good, and it's great to see Wargaming get in some public coverage. So be interesting to see how that works out. Wish the guys there a lot of luck. However, they did cause a little bit of kerfuffle when they leaked some pictures of Necrons, and I've heard various sides of the story. I know some retailers were upset, because the problem is if they put those pictures up on their website or try and pre-order stuff, it can give them problems with GW. Of course, GW haven't admitted to that, but that's the fear from the shops, I guess. So it'd be interesting to see how that all shakes out. Obviously, at some stage, a little cease and desist letter did appear over at BW saying, please take our pictures down, which they very promptly did. And, of course, they're now doing a Necron week, because the Necrons are now finally out. I'm not particularly interested. However, I'm sure most of the gaming universe, particularly in the Wargaming UK market, is very interested. One of the problems I'm finding now, where I'm really not liking the GW games much these days, it is a little bit of a problem, because most people do like them still, but I am able to persuade them to try out other things every now and then, which is good for me. But it is a sad day for me when I think I've become one of the anti-GW brigade. I still have a load of GW stuff, but it's on my sort of probably going to sell it list nowadays, which is very sad. But there you go. Right, finally, let's talk about some computer games and some stuff that's going on my Christmas list. War Machine. Really enjoying War Machine right now. And the two-player box set is now out. Unfortunately, when I went to buy it, it had already sold, so I just bought a load of other bits instead. The War Machine two-player box is absolutely awesome. If you want to get into War Machine, I think that's what you should buy. You're going to get Kador and Protectorate Menoth. You're going to get a pretty good force. You're basically getting the battle box plus a unit of infantry. Can't lose. Lots of really cool stuff. I'm liking the look of Circle of Ulbrus. More Troll Buds, more Protectorate Menoth, maybe a bit of Kador. Really enjoying the look of those. And of course, there's Domination, if I remember, is the new book coming out for for Hordes. And I'm liking the look of that. It's going to have these kind of battle engines as well. I like the look of the Everblight one, the kind of great big tentacle tower thing. That looks quite interesting. Looking forward to seeing all the other ones. The Circle one, I like and I dislike at the same time. I can't make my mind up about it. I like the kind of dark crystally planetarium-y thing. I'm not so keen on the base. Have to see. Most of these things, you see pictures, you're not sure if you like them, and then you see them in the flesh, and they're awesome. So definitely liking all that. I'm also still quite keen on Infinity. I've actually got my four armies. Sadly, I've only got one painted at the moment. The others are still in their boxes. My painting backlog catalogue is getting a bit ridiculous at the moment. So I'm going to have to have a look at that. But definitely enjoying all that stuff. Much probably more exciting for you if you're not into all this gaming and board gaming stuff is the GTA trailer. Interesting. Return to San Andreas. Lots of speculation as to who the character is going to be and what the story is going to be. However, all we've had is that little basic leak trailer. Now, the leak trailer might actually have nothing to do with the game, bear in mind. It might just be literally just a thing to make people aware that it's coming. Be interesting to see what happens further down the line. Maybe the press people have had a leak from the studio as to exactly what they're going to put in there. But definitely looking forward to seeing that one. Skyrim, that's going to waste hours and hours of playtime, I think. I'm not sure if as of today, as when I'm recording, it's actually out, but it's going to be out real soon. Battlefield, looking absolutely excellent as well. Lots of really cool bits. But yeah, basically GTA, Skyrim and Battlefield have caught my eye, and I've kind of lost track of all the other cool games coming out, but we're now in that Christmas surge, so it's a good time to be a gamer. I did also see news about a new version of GoldenEye, which got me all excited till I heard about it in a bit more detail, and now I'm not so sure. But lots of cool stuff out there with Christmas coming. I'm hoping, out of all that big long list of games I listed out, you found something that might interest you. Lots of really cool bits definitely coming out, or, you know, now available. It is a big problem. There is so much on the market now. How do you find it all? Well, I would recommend Beasts of War. I would also recommend the Miniatures page and Board Game Geek. They're great resources. I also quite like the IGN website as well. And, of course, you've got all your normal magazine channels. Lots of really good stuff going on. Good time to be a gamer. Unfortunately, with money being a problem, I'm not sure how things are going to pan out for the manufacturers. I am a bit concerned that there are so many games and so many game companies out there. It could become a little bit of a problem. Anyway, I'm going to take a little break, and when I come back, I'm going to talk a bit about the Game Crafter. The reason being, I've had obviously a lot of experience with it recently, having designed these two games, and also might cover a little bit about Kickstarter. These are fairly new things to me, and I'm just going to talk about, you know, what I think the pros and cons of it are, really. So anyway, let's take a break, and when we come back, let's get all arty.
Quick, shut that door, man.
As if that's going to stop it.
Look, it's not my fault the Elder Sign didn't work.
That's because it's shaped like a star.
No, it's shaped like a tree.
Star!
Tree!
Star! Well, it's too late now. We're the last ones.
What about Lady Hetherington?
She set on fire, then exploded.
And Father O'Leary?
He plucked out his own eyeballs and ate them.
Damn! I wish I'd visited Yogg-Sothoth.com more often.
Yogg-Sothoth.com?
Yes, you know, that Call of Cthulhu website. Jolly useful. It's got forums, news, even interviews with the great and the undead.
Oh, I do wish you hadn't said that.
Oh, my lord! Stay away from me, you horror! No!
Well, you'll not take me! What? No! Please, no!
Yogg Radio, a Cthulhu podcast from Yogg-Sothoth.com.
Well, hello and welcome back. Right, now the Game Crafter website. This is a very interesting, fairly recent development in the gaming world. It's basically a website where you can download some templates, design all your game components that you want to use boards or cards for, and even tiles. You've also got a template which allows you to write up your rules. You upload all of this to the GameCrafter website, and you can also add some parts, and their parts list is getting bigger and bigger and better and better. There's little kind of tiddlywink type components. There's little playing pawns, and they can also include things like cars and boats. They've got a spinner now, wooden blocks, translucent pieces, little discs which you can attach stickers to, and it looks pretty slick. Now, I not really heard about it till Essen, and then with these game ideas I came up with after Essen, I thought, well, I'll give it a go. So I downloaded the templates, did all my design, uploaded everything. I shot the gun a little bit quick and ordered my Moth-Eating Cats game just to have an idea of the component quality, and I've got it here. And I have to say, I'm pretty impressed. A nice black box, about 10-inch by 10-inch by 1-inch. Very nice. My cover design has been stuck on with a sticky label. Looks really slick, pretty professional. It's pretty much lined up. It's not too off. I also splashed a bit of cash and stuck a sticker on the back of the box as well. And that's not lined up quite so well, but looks pretty good. Very happy with that. So let's open up the box here. Well, inside, I've got a set of rules that have been folded up, and one of the criticisms I've seen is the way they print it out is a little bit odd. And, yeah, it doesn't quite work. Part of the problem is page 1 is printed the correct way up, and then on the back of page 1, you've got page 2 printed the incorrect way up, which is very irritating unless you put your rules actually in a folder, for example, and then, you know, read it landscape style. Then it makes sense, because you just, you know, like a flip chart, you flip up the page and you can then read the other page. So if you've got lots and lots of rules over several pages, it could look a little bit awkward. Anyway, I've got one baggie with cards. I'll come back to them. I've also got two big 10-inch play mats, a load of sticky labels, and I decided to let the Game Crafter put their advert in. And the Game Crafter advert, as you can hear, is a fairly thick card, and the big play mats, as you can hear, are the same thick card. I would like this card to be a little bit thicker. It's a little bit thin and flimsy for a play mat. However, they have just recently brought out a slightly better quality play mat, I believe. I haven't seen too much about that yet, so I'm not going to comment on it. But, you know, it's thick enough. It will do, particularly for a prototype game anyway. For an actual finished product, the quality could do with being a little bit better, to be honest. Having said that, the actual print quality is really good. My text is nice and crisp. The graphics are pretty good. The black's a nice lustrous black. It's got a slightly kind of satin sheen to it. It's slightly glossy. And, you know, it's got a bit of thickness to it, so it's not too bad. My other playmat, I've done that double-sided. Again, on that, it's flipped. It's not printed in the same orientation. You know, the top on one side is the bottom on the other, which may or may not be a problem for you, so just bear that in mind. Again, it looks pretty good, about how I'd expect it. Now, these sticky labels here, they seem to cut the sheet up in a weird way. I guess that's to get it in the box. Yeah, it's a little bit too big to go in the box. I believe it's something like 32 counters to a sheet, and basically they're sticky labels, and you have to peel them off and stick them onto some counters. Now, unfortunately, I didn't buy the counters at the time, which I regret doing now, but yeah, looks good. Again, quite happy. There's a little bit of an offset problem on a few of the counters, but it's not too bad, and it's within the tolerance of the template that you can download. So I'm pretty happy with that. That looks pretty good. For some reason, I think I might have mucked up the amount of tokens, because I've got a lot of blank white circles here. Now, one of the downsides to the Game Crafter is they basically charge you by a sheet. So if you're ordering 32 counters and there's 32 counters to a sheet, you've optimized your value. If your game only uses, let's say, 16 counters, well, you're paying for 32 even though you've only got 16. So that could be a problem. Anyway, right, let me open up the baggie here. And I've actually got two decks in this game. The total cards hopefully add up to the correct amount of cards per sheet. And I can't remember the exact number now. I think it was something like 16, but you can look it up on the website. So the first counters in my game are actually representing the routers, and they're double printed, and thankfully the orientation on the front and back of the cards is correct. The top of my card is the top of the back of my card, so that's good. The background for my back of my card's a little bit darker than I was expecting, but actually is not a problem for this particular card design. I'm quite happy with that. And on the front, again, the text and the colours look good. Very happy with that. So they're great. So my router cards are fantastic. I've then got my spam chat deck, which is where all the cats and the moths and special cards and everything are. Now, a lot of these images I've got to thank a friend of mine for letting me use. He basically has quite a few cats, taken lots of pictures off them, and basically said to me, yeah, you can use my photos for your game. So very pleased with how some of these turned out. Some of them are a little bit dark. Like, I've got a couple of pictures of white cats, and they're still white, but they're a bit darker than I was expecting. I think that might be because they're doing something like an auto levels, or they're picking one of my cards that's very bright to be kind of the default card, and it's colour balancing all the other cards based on that one. And the one that's very, very bright is about how I'd expect all of my cards to look. So I'm not quite sure what's going on there. I might have to make an inquiry about that. But I'm happy with the results, don't get me wrong. There's not a big problem. Decks, nice, good. Backs, looking good. I don't know if you'll be able to hear the card on it. So, you know, nice thick card. Where it's got a nice lustrous black on white card, on the edges the cards are, you know, potentially going to be chippable to expose some white, which might be a problem on your card game. I do recommend card protectors for all card games personally, and that will help minimise that. But yeah, looks good, text is fab, colours mostly okay, a little bit darker than I was expecting, the cards slightly better quality than I was expecting. They're almost as thick as the playmats, which is why the playmats are a little bit disappointing. But having said all that, a great way to prototype your games. Download the templates, knock up your designs, upload it to their website, order it, and along it comes. And of course, you can always offer it for sale direct from the website. Now, the website seems to be going through a redesign process at the moment, so I've logged on 3 times recently, and each time they've tweaked a different part of the website. I quite liked how it was the first time I logged on. Some of the extra tweaks, yeah, they're a slight improvement. But the actual process for uploading your stuff is basically you log into your account, you go to a section where you're designing stuff and you've got a My Games, and you can create a folder structure. Now, what I recommend you do is you create a folder structure on your computer and you upload that. So for example, for my Moth Eating Cats game, I've got a folder for tokens, a folder for my playmats, a folder for all my kind of PR images that are going to go on the website, a folder for my cats, a folder for my moths, a folder for my special events, and a folder for my router deck. And I've basically got the same format on my hard disk, and I upload the pictures from there. Now, the templates I recommend you use are obviously Photoshop or Illustrator or whatever your chosen graphic design package is that you can download from their website. But when you're actually uploading the images, I went with PNG files. I think JPEGs are also acceptable. So basically, on my computer, I've got the master images in Photoshop file format, and then I've exported them from Photoshop as PNG files, and that's what I've selected to upload to the website. And it's a fairly painless process. Now, if during the process of doing your game you need to change a component, you just re-export it from Photoshop if that's what you're using, and then you go into the GameCrafter website, you can actually click on the part you wish to replace. It will then ask you to pick the file that you're meant to be using, and when you do that, there's a little replace upload button, and you can click browse, pick your new version of the card, click on the replace button, it will now upload the thing. Now, I actually was doing this just after I'd already placed an order for my Moths game, and luckily for me, By the time it replaced all the pictures, my print run hadn't actually occurred. So I was very pleased to notice that when I received my goods, I actually did get my new version of the cards. Obviously, I recommend you get your design as locked down as possible before ordering stuff, because this is the downside to the Game Crafter. This particular box, Moth-Eating Cats, is a lot more expensive than I would have liked initially. Part of the fact is I've gone nuts. I've got sticker front and back on my box. I've got two playmats. I've got quite a lot of cards, a lot of counters and tokens and all that stuff. And that does knock up the price. So that's, you know, makes the base game reasonably expensive. Then you've got the shipping cost on top of that, which obviously increases your cost. And then, of course, you've got import duty. Now, that was particularly annoying. I think I had £7 import duty, but an £8 handling fee. So by the time I've paid for this, it's actually proved to be a little bit more expensive than I would have liked. So that is something you've got to watch out for. Now, I am trying to do some research to see if there's a UK equivalent to this, but it's going to have to be really good, because despite all the cost implications, and the delay and giddiness and all that, it's well worth it, and it's very slick and very professional and is well recognised as a very good way of doing stuff these days. Now, when I say a delay, I would say I uploaded this game, placed an order, and within 5 days I've got the box in my hand. So that goes from placing an order for it being printed, cut, packed, shipped, held in customs, the whole lot. That is pretty impressive, I have to say. You know, even Amazon orders for genuine, real games, so to speak, can take, you know, 2-3 days to turn up. So I'm pretty impressed. Now, there are some components you can order as well. I haven't got too many of them. I did also choose to order Jumpgate, which is a game that started off on GameCrafter, and as you can hear, lots of plastic rubbish. Now, inside, you've got, in this game, you've got spaceships and poker counters. Now, the poker counters, they're these kind of ones where they're circles with little crimped edges, so they're kind of locked together if you try and twist them. They're a lot smaller than I was expecting. They're smaller than a 2p coin, and that's a bit of a problem, because the counters that you can get printed out as stickers, they are basically 2p coin size. I've actually got an old 2p coin that I've stuck a counter to just to see what it looks like, and it's pretty good. So these poker chips are no good for that, but they're good as markers and all that stuff. They're little ships. Well, you know, they're pretty basic, and they're good fun. Be really good for a kind of continental, intercontinental nuclear missile type game, which I patented already. Yeah, looks good. Now, what they've done for this game, they've got a deck of cards, but they've also got these large tiles, and I was trying to work out how they did that. Now, I believe there is an option to download a template for kind of, was it 4-inch playmats? Let's have a look. Yeah, about 4-inch playmats. So what they've done is they've done 4-inch square playmats and a deck of cards. Now, this game, you don't get stickers on the box, and that seems to have made his game a lot cheaper. I've actually been playing around on the website with looking at, you know, if you delete some options, how it affects the price of your game. And as I say, if you can work the system well, you can actually reduce the price of your game, and it makes quite a big difference to the overall total. Now, this game, Jumpgate, he hasn't put any stickers on, so the black box has got this lovely white logo called thegamecrafter.com, which is great, looks good. However, it means if you've got six games all with no stickers, they're all going to be black boxes with the same stuff on. So it's a little bit of a shame that adding the sticker seems to add a fair bit of price to your game. But, I mean, this sticker that I've got on my box, let's have a look here. It's 8 inches. So you've got an 8-inch square sticker. That's pretty big. And it looks great, I have to say. I'm really pleased with it. I just like putting it up on the shelf and looking at it. And it allows you to do a little bit of vanity publishing, of course. But where it's really cool is it allows you to get your game out there. People can go, give it a go. And if they like it, they recommend it, you'll get more and more orders pouring in, and if you're really lucky, some publisher will come along and go, there's a game, guy's gone off, done all of the work. Yeah, the graphics maybe aren't as good as we would like, maybe the components aren't as good as we'd like, but the actual fundamental game seems pretty solid. It's very popular. They might even look at it and go, well, we like the game, we're not sure about the theme, but we can re-theme it. And they might approach you, as they have done with a few games, and said, let's turn this into a proper game. So Jumpgate that I've got here, available from the Game Crafter, is now also available in like a proper game box. And the upgrade does look nice. Is it worth changing to that versus the Game Crafter? Well, that's a decision for you as a gamer to make. But I'm pretty impressed, I have to say. Now, another game has also had the same process happen to it, and I believe, is it Fire Rescue? It had a different name at one stage. I think it was also 9/11 Fire Panic or something. It had some different names, but that started off, I believe, on Game Crafter. That's now a pretty slick, full, proper game, and that's recently had a really good component review by Drakenstrike. If you haven't seen the Drakenstrike YouTube videos, go check them out. They're a really good way of seeing the components and a little bit of discussion. With Scott not doing his board games with Scott anymore, people like Tom Vassell at the Dice Tower and Drakenstrike and other guys, they kind of stepped in and helped keep that really useful facility going on. I believe Scott does pop out the odd video still, so you should still go check out his websites and blogs and all that. But looking at the upgrade from the Game Crafter to the most recent version of Fire Rescue, that is definitely a big step up in quality. The playmat is not too different, but all the other bits and pieces have had a nice little upgrade. And I think it's a great thing for game designers and for the publishing business. Now, the reason it's particularly interesting is, as I understand it, to actually create a game traditionally, you have to obviously create the game, do a little bit of a beta test and all that stuff. You then have to say, please, can I have a minimum order of your game? And they say, certainly. Is that, you know, 2,000, 3,000, or 4,000 pieces? With this, it's a print-on-demand service. So basically, you upload a digital file, and there are no components printed or stock held or anything. And when they place an order, it will take your order, bundle it all up, print it, cut it, do all that good stuff, put it in the box and ship it to you. So it's good for the game crafter because it means it minimizes the amount of stock they need to hold and the risk they need to take. Now, obviously, they do need to hold some stock, all the little plastic pieces and wooden blocks and everything they have, plus all the cardboard and plus the cutting machines. And that's one of the downsides to it, is if you want to do certain sorts of games, they might not actually have the tools to enable you to do that. So obviously card games are going to be very popular with the Game Crafter because they've got a brilliant set of card cutting machines and lots of nice templates already in place. But if you want each player to have a 5-inch playmat, well, if they don't offer a 5-inch playmat, you're not going to be able to do that. So you're going to have to go to either a 4-inch playmat or an 8-inch playmat or whatever options they happen to have. And it might be the player, when they get the game, is going to have to do some cutting. So I did see one guy came up with an idea where he wanted to give a tuck box to put the cards into. However, that really adds a lot of cost to your game, I find. So what he did is he specified a playmat, and on that he had a graphic of the tuck box. So when the consumer receives it, they have to actually cut out their own tuck box and fold it and glue it all themselves. But it was a way of offering that facility to the players of the game who'd requested it. Now, if you do decide to go down this route, obviously the downside with some of the games is how much testing and quality control have they had. Some have had more, some have had less, and you might be buying a load of old rubbish. So there is a review facility, and obviously if the game's listed on Board Game Geek, hopefully you can get a pretty good idea of how good or not it is there. In addition, the actual quality of the stuff you get is not necessarily going to be as slick as your more traditional board games from the likes of Rio Grande and all that lot. So just bear that in mind. But yeah, I'm really impressed. Is it a good thing for the game industry? Well, yes and no. It's good because it allows slightly quirky ideas to get out there. It you know, a lot of good games maybe wouldn't get a voice otherwise. However, there is this downside that, you know, any old person, including myself, can now become a game designer. And I think it's a bit like the early days of desktop publishing. I think there'll be a big surge of just dross and bad ideas. However, you know, the cream's going to rise to the top, and away we go. Now, obviously, because I'm putting myself in that position, I've got two games which may or may not be derided. I'm hoping they prove to be popular, and the GameCraft has made it all possible. Now, the other thing you can do is Kickstarter, and again, this seems to be an American-based thing. I believe you have to have an American bank account. And this has been used recently to actually get the money to get games in production. And the reason for that is to do proper kind of board games, it's blinking expensive. I mean, there was an interview with Martin Wallace at Essen, and he was talking about just the price just to have a custom dice was some horrendously high figure to make a mould just to make this special dice. So, basically, the Kickstarter is like a crowdsourcing fundraising platform, and basically you create a nice video and you basically get people to commit to money. And what a lot of games companies are doing is that they're using that to get their game generating enough money so they can actually get the game into production and shipped out. And there's often a little temptation offering, you know, special pre-order bonus bits and pieces. And I think with games like the game site GameCraft and Kickstarter, those two combined, is going to be quite a challenge to some of the more traditional game companies, because obviously some of them are struggling because they're taking big chances by going out there, buying up game rights, producing huge quantities of boxes, shipping them out, and then discovering they've got a flop. And, you know, in the meantime, they've sunk, I don't know, 40 grand on a game that's going nowhere. Equally, of course, they might sink 40 grand into a game and it generates them way more in return. So I think it's going to be an interesting time. With money being tight, I can see game sites like the GameCrafter and projects like Kickstarter really helping some people and maybe hindering others. My only caveat is where's the quality control issue? Now, you might end up saying the same about my game if you happen to buy it. It's not yet available for purchase, but it'd be interesting to see. Here I am talking about other people, and I might have to talk about myself in the same light. But anyway, I've really enjoyed my time with the GameCrafter. I've got lots of game ideas I've always kind of put on the shelf because I've got no way of actually realising them. The GameCrafter allows me to do that. So for me, it's a very exciting development. As I say, the only slight downside is being based in America, there is a cost implication in both shipping and import duty. It'd be interesting to see how things develop. Anyway, I think I've spent quite a long time. We're getting up to something like 45 minutes or more now. I will catch you next time. So until then, happy gaming.
And I'm back.
Right, just a little quick update. I've just been to the MMP website. For those of you who are into ASL, they've updated the picture for the action pack, Road to Rome. So that's nice to see. But more interestingly, you can now pre-order Festung Budapest, which is the new historical module. There's probably going to be some other bits I'll see, but I thought I'd just quickly insert this little bit on the end here due to the fact I've just done two shows based around ASL. So anyway, get your counter clipping ready. Looks like Festung Budapest is hopefully going to be with us by next year. It's already over 200 pre-orders, I believe, with a target of 700, so that's doing pretty well. And the action pack is already over its pre-order limit, so that should be coming out real soon. So good times to be an ASLer. Anyway, I will catch you next time, and good gaming!